And so to our album reviews on this Friday night. First up will be Dublin musician, singer and spoken word artist David Balfe, who goes by the name of For Those I Love. He's been creating some waves over the last year, including an appearance on the BBC Later Show last November and an extraordinary interview with Tommy Tiernan. Today he releases his debut album, which is the same title as the artist himself, For Those I Love. Next up will be a melding of pop, hip-hop and electronica and infectious grooves from producer, singer and songwriter Noga Erez. Her second album arrives today. It's called Kids. And finally, known to a generation of Irish indie kids from the 80s and 90s as the frontman of the groundbreaking Cork band Micro Disney and subsequently Fatima Mansions. But after many years living abroad, Cathal Coughlan brings us his latest album, which is called Songs of Co-Aclan. Alan Corr and Nadine O'Regan have been reviewing it. I've been listening to all three. We'll start close to home. And For Those I Love, the musical moniker of Dubliner David Balfe, self-titled album is the one we're talking about today. It's the lyrics in all of the songs on this are pretty explicit, but the emotions are extraordinary. Let's have a listen to how the album starts. I'll be warned, there is language within this. I Have a Love.
With words that spoke soft of those lost, then we send you off on funeral clothes.
I Have a Love, the opening track from For Those I Love, from the album For Those I Love, self-titled debut album. And Nadine O'Regan and Alan Corr, as I said, have been listening to the albums for us this week. This was due for release, or had been released in 2019, but was subsequently deleted. But I suppose you have to immediately talk about the emotional strength of this album. Tell us a little bit about David Balfe and what is informing the emotions that he's expressing on this album for us, Nadine.
Yeah, it was released in 2019, in summer 2019, and the album was recorded by David Balfe, more or less in tribute to his best friend, the poet and artist Paul Curran, who died tragically in 2018. The pair had been really great friends. They'd met in their first year of secondary school, and David is from Donaghmead, and the two had formed an immediate bond over poetry and music. And when Paul died, that sent David, you know, into a very dark spiral. And he said, actually, in interviews around the time, that he didn't make this record for the public. He made it for his friends and for Paul's friends. And what he did was he actually went back to all the recordings that they'd made together, and he created samples from some of those recordings, and he got some old music that he and Paul had loved. And he made the whole album more or less on Ableton in his mother's box bedroom in Donaghmead. And it's an incredibly intense tapestry of work. You can see or hear the cutting up of different pieces of music, the elements of spoken word or dialogue that are in there and are also actually in the videos that are surfacing online. I remember when I actually first heard the record back in 2019, I just couldn't get over how good it was. And I interviewed him and then, you know, subsequently wanted to put it into sort of my albums of the year 2019, only to discover that it got deleted, because I think they wanted to re-release it for a broader audience because he had done everything himself, but the talent was just unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, so it might be in your best of albums of 2021. We'll wait and see when that list comes.
Yeah, exactly.
Alan, again, there's such an emotional truth in this album. I have to say, when I saw him interviewed by Tommy Tiernan, I was really upset at the end of the interview in a very positive way. He was so emotionally open in what he said. But he's condensed this album down from 70 tracks to just 9. Now, there's a lesson that lots of people could follow.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, the lyrics and the kind of sentiments in this album is, and the honesty of those lyrics is what everyone's talking about. But I think it's also, we're talking about the production going on here, Sean. He really does bare his soul lyrically, but I think he's overlooked in terms of the sonics on this set. It's an incredible piece of work because it just goes through so many different moods of kind of boomy, kind of warehouse rave atmospherics to furious broad shots. sides about social injustice. And then there's these tender spoken word passages where we really see that emotion leak out. And it's very moving to hear, you know, Paul Curran's voice recorded on WhatsApp recordings that Dave had made over the years.
Yeah.
And they're used throughout the album along with other friends of his. And it adds a real kind of reality and immediacy to what is essentially a very moving testimony to a lost friend and also a collaborator. So condensing those 76 songs down to these nine is pretty extraordinary. Yeah. And it was all done in his ma's shed in his back garden in Dunamead. And I think, Sean, that that back shed needs a blue plaque on the door at this stage.
Well, we don't know if it's the shed or the bedroom, but somewhere near the house anyway in Dunamead. It's one of the two places. I don't care where it was. It was brilliantly done, whichever part of the house it was done in. Let's have a listen to another track. It's two tracks together, really, Birthday the Pain, but we'll probably really hear just from the opening track there, Birthday.
I was seven in that same field beside me gaff, kicking through the leaves and the grass until two Garda rock up, batons in hand, and need you crying for your mams. And this is no dramatics. This is no tales and 90s classics. You spend your whole life being brave and you hope that things will change. So don't fucking ask me why I don't want to age. It just marks the time of things staying the same. But the songs sound fun and you dance with your mates and it's grand until the next day.
I never thought that a song about show and tell in senior infants would go to the places that Birthday the Pain goes to in the space of a couple of minutes there. It's an extraordinary, Nadine, Alan has touched on it. It's extraordinary both in its musical content and in its lyrical content.
Yeah, I mean, he gets in quite a few, you know, very, very sort of intense comments at people who are essentially ignoring the plight of others in society, and particularly in Dublin. He writes about how you joke about the junkies, addicts that get dehumanized because they're poor, he says on one song, and then on another, he calls people, you know, you teeth whitening, pay for designer drugs, and then he says your drugs aren't class, they're upper middle class. You know, so there's a real anger coming straight out of this album, and it is kind of woven in, though. It's part of the tapestry. It's one of the many voices and moods that inform the record. But I guess one of the things about this album is, you know, it is a dark album in so many respects, because there is so much pain there. And even though sometimes he puts in really beautiful melodic rhythms through it and that little flavour of R&B, but not enough can disguise, I guess, the prevailing mood. And you do think actually of Mike Skinner of the Streets as well, actually.
Yeah, and did I hear at the beginning of that, Alan, I think there might have been a little bit of a football chant feel to it. And I think maybe Coolock Reds and Shelburne might be an important football team here.
Very much so. And in fact, Paul Curran's ashes were actually kind of brought to a Shelburne game and put on the grounds. And I think it's worth noting that just in relation to the socio-economic or the socio-political issues on the album, the original mixtape which he released last August was called Into a World that doesn't Understand It Unless You're From It. So I think it's quite significant that he does really talk about those things. And for me, one of the best songs in it is Top Scheme, in which he kind of lacerates people who do not come from this background and have a sneering, patronising attitude toward it. And he's very open about that and very honest.
Stars from you, Alan.
Well, I mean, this is, you know, the triumph of the underdog. It's a gut punch of an album that's also tender as a caress. It's the ultimate bittersweet symphony, not just a requiem. It's a straight 5 out of 5, no doubt about it.
What are you saying, Nadine?
I went with 4.5, so very close to the 5 as well.
All right, so very high marks indeed, I think, and from everybody there for Those I Love and the self-titled debut album, even though it had that pre-release, if you like, in 2019 and then came back. Right, let's move on then to something of an enigma, this woman that we're about to hear next, Noga Erez. Let's just start with a track from her, first of all, and we can find out about her afterwards. This is called End of the Road.
I got Susanna in my baggage, got a list in my bucket. Squeeze the sponge, drop the pocket. I fit in any socket. Close the door, I'm a knock it. I got my ticket, I'm a flea. What you think of me? I don't know what really, really happens at the end of the road. I don't know what really, really happens at the end of the road.
End of the Road, the title of the track from an album called Kids from Noga Erez. Alan, who is Noga Erez?
Well, she is a musician, singer and producer from Tel Aviv, and this is her second album. She made it with her creative and life partner, Ori Russo, and she really is a force of nature, Sean. This album is it's a maze of ideas, just teeming with crazy lyrics, and they're deeply personal and political. I mean, the thing that really struck me about it on the first listen was just the pure strangeness of it. It's just giddy with invention. And like, as a vocalist, she ranges from the bombastic to the incredibly kind of seductive, and kind of almost have this kind of like smoky purr on some songs, and other songs she's kind of, it's like going to a rave. I mean, it's truly, you know, mind and foot expanding stuff that goes all over the place. Really strange, but really smart, intricate pop. And I absolutely adored this. I thought it was terrific fun, but also quite thought-provoking given some of the subjects she covers on it.
Yeah, well, I suppose you can't be from that part of the world and avoid politics. How does she handle politics in her songs, Nadine?
She does get in reference there, but she's careful as well. I mean, I think she's somebody who's probably learned from experience. You know, she doesn't actually talk in interviews, for example, about the Palestinian conflict, and she doesn't. She will say things like, "We don't need bombs," you know, and then she'll slip and slide into something else. So, you know, oblique is probably her method of going forward. And actually, she has said that she thinks songs are best when they reflect reality rather than being overly didactic. I don't think she's necessarily trying to write protest songs on this album as much as trying to convey a more human experience of what it is to exist in a region where there is a lot of conflict.
Do you think she's sidestepping things by doing that, Nadine?
You know, it's a funny one, because I think in the genre that she's in, you know, she's been called actually in Israel the Israelian Bjork, and I think it possibly doesn't suit the genre that she's working in to be as didactic. Mind you, having said that, Kendrick Lamar is one of her heroes, and he certainly can get out a protest song when he wants to. So I think it's kind of a combination of things. I would imagine rather than sidestepping, she's choosing to reflect herself as an artist as best she wants to. I think it's being true to herself. But having said that, I would totally agree with Alan. You know, the sheer invention on this record is a thing of wonder. You know, I found myself thinking of reference points like Missy Elliott's production style. I was thinking of Cardi B there when it came to the lyrics, also Lizzo. You know, there are so many amazing hip hop artists that you think of. And then you look at the videos and you think of David Byrne and Talking Heads. It's actually a dizzying array of influences. And the album's actually quite short. You know, it's under about 35 minutes, but often within the space of 1 3-minute song, she will slip and slide into so many different grooves. She'll inject a bit of humor there in the production. She's often doing something very, very simple, like she'll put in a noise of crickets, you know, to illustrate a lyric, and it'll raise a smile in a second, and then she'll move on to something else.
Okay, let's listen to a track called No News on TV.
TikTok, I just woke up and I don't know what's the time.
There you go. No News on TV from Noga Erez and her new album, Kids. And Russo, her studio partner, is involved in that track as well. He's involved in the whole album, but he's particularly there on that track, Alan.
Oh, very much so, yeah. It's very much a collaborative album. Just on that very point about politics, in terms of the kind of like, like she intimates her kind of views. I mean, on the title track, Kids, she says, remember 67. And I do not think she's talking about the summer of love there, Sean.
No.
So basically, you know, Russo is all over this. And it kind of, for me, it ranges from, you know, Prince to Gorillaz, that kind of pan-global kind of pop. It's kinetic with ideas. It's just kind of so wide ranging. But the melodies really kind of break through on this. It's a very dense album, but it's also full of these really sweet pop melodies. And she does a lot of very interesting things. She's got a lot of moves. There's Billie Eilish kind of style stuff going on as well.
Right.
There's Khalees going on as well. So it's a huge range of influences.
Stars from you first this time, Nadine.
I highly recommend people listen to this. 4 stars from me.
4 from Nadine. What are you saying, Alan?
Well, I think this is very witty, state-of-the-art pop. Also 4 out of 5 for me, Sean.
Ah, you've been having a good time in the listening booth, the pair of you, haven't you? Let's move on then to album number 3, Song of Coa Clan, the 6th studio album from Irish singer-songwriter Cathal Coughlan. Let's have a listen to a track, Owl in the Parlour.
Food, lodging and a front row seat. Nation once again retreats. Time will erase us if we yield.
Isle in the Parlour, the title of that track from Cathal Coughlan and the new album Song of Coa Clan. Who can explain the title of the album to me?
Well, Coa Clan, I think, is a tongue-in-cheek pronunciation of Cathal's name, Cathal Coughlan.
I gotcha.
A bit of an alter ego, if you will, Sean, for a man and an artist who's long harbored Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde tendencies. So I think this Coa Clan guy is the other side of Cathal Coughlan. You will know him from Micro Disney and Fatima Mansions. And I think this is an album that shows two sides to him, kind of the bright side and light side, and the more kind of corrosive, you know, political Fatima Mansions thing. That song you just played there, Owl in the Parlour, it's for me, it's a standout song on the album, and it's Coughlan once again casting a cold eye on perfidious Albion, or as Joe Biden calls them, the Brits. So basically, it's an album full of very funny lyrics. There's a great lyric in that song, camouflage as formal daywear.
I want you to say,
lost his gift.
You refer to him as the king, but I'll let you say what he's the king of, Alan.
The king of rock and roll.
Yeah, rock and roll.
Sorry for that.
I loved it. I have to, because the tone of that song in particular, Owl in the Parlour, and of several across the album, really has that kind of droll, minor key, a little bit
Scott Walker.
Is he a little bit bored with the world, or is there a different something else going on, Nadine?
Yeah, I mean, it is droll, and there's a touch of the kind of Neil Hannon sort of irony featuring, you know, across the album, I guess. Although I have to say, even though I also really liked Owl in the Parlour, I probably preferred the songs where, or at least the lyrics, where I felt there were stronger moments of sincerity, if you like, because I suppose one of the things for me about this record is that there's quite a lot of, I suppose, musical melodrama on the record. You know, there's a lot of kind of organ music and sort of plinkety plink and lines like "We bury the gold in the churchyard," which could be a line, you know, sung to you across the stage quite easily at the opening of a story. And while that is effective and, you know, you can see how it works for a particular audience, personally I preferred it when he was more into the indie choruses. And actually the lovely opening song has a superb chorus on it, but you know, there are times when it's flitting between genres a little bit for me.
As you say, that theatrical and almost vaudevillian thing is there, quite melodramatic at times. But there's also a kind of a nostalgic side that started to come out towards the end of the track list. Let's have a listen to a track called The Copper Beach.
The time has passed, I'm here alone. Now mother's gone as well. Their house is a dusty shell. Each bump and scratch I know too well. Copper Beach and the time lapse limit.
Yeah, it has the feel of a look back, a kind of a wistful look back on life, that track for me, The Copper Beach, and that's the beach with two E's, obviously the tree. Nadine, what are you saying overall for Cathal Coughlan? And I love it now that it's the song of Coa Clan, probably the way his name's said in America, I guess, is part of it.
Exactly.
I'll go with 3 stars for this. I think there are a lot of really strong tracks on this, but sometimes it maybe lacks a bit in the way of cohesiveness.
All right, and what are you saying overall, Alan?
Well, I think this is a Vera Maher burlesque show being staged in a motorway lay-by outside London. I really liked it, actually. I give it a 4 out of 5.
All right. That's Alan Carr and Nadine O'Regan speaking to us this evening about our 3 albums, The Song of Coa Clan from Cathal Coughlan, Kids from Noga Erez, and For Those I Love, debut album from the artist who is called, for those I love, David Balfe. That is our lot for this evening, for this week, in fact, here in Arena. Leah Murphy and Paula Shields researched. Janice Murphy was the broadcast coordinator. Sound supervision this evening was by Mark McGrath, and tonight's programme was produced by Kay Sheehy, who will be in the seat for the next week. I have a little bit of time off, and I will be back with you after the Easter period, so try to keep your chocolates outside your 5K limit. It's the only way I'll survive. Have a great time, and talk to you in about a week's time.